It's Friday. Yes, Friday. Which means one thing, time for our reporter roundtable, where our media panelists get us updated on all the topics that made headlines this week. Today, my panel includes Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Mike Sharp with KIVI Television, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. We've got a lot to cover, so we're going to get right into it. Betsy, justice reinvestment, where are we? What's the latest? This just keeps bubbling up to the surface.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're in the middle of a very serious process in which the legislature is looking to change the way we do things in Idaho because of where it's gotten us with facing down a $500 million prison expansion. And so the Legislative Oversight Committee that is overseeing this held another hearing this past week, and just on Monday, and they looked at some very specific research, including things like compassionate release. That's where most states, when an inmate is dying, terminally ill, basically no threat anymore, they release them rather than pay all their medical costs. We do very little of that here in Idaho. So that's one area they're looking at. Another area they're looking at is time off for good behavior. We eliminated that back in 1986 when we imposed indeterminate sentencing. It turns out there are dozens of other states that have indeterminate sentencing that still make use of time off for good behavior in specific ways. It's not automatic. If inmates do things that show that they're more likely to succeed on the outside, they go through training, they go through treatment, then they get some time off. So that's another thing the state's looking at. But I think kind of the biggest thing that hit the members of the committee this week was some national research about how incarceration, as it increases, is actually not making us safer. Mm-hmm. And pretty much all the research agrees on this now, that once our incarceration rate got up beyond a certain point, increasing it further meant that we were imprisoning lesser offenders. And those lesser offenders get in there and they learn criminal habits and then they get released. And during the time they're in there, they lose their ties with their family, their employment, and their community. And the result is actually more crime rather than less. So we've got a lot to deal with.
You know, that's an interesting comment, Betsy. I've heard from law enforcement sources over the years that they say, you want to know how to make a criminal, send them to prison.
Yeah.
So that's – at least they're looking at that, though, now.
And 98% of Idaho's prison inmates eventually do get released into our communities.
98%.
98%.
So, Scott, talking about justice and crime, once again, Canyon County Jail.
Yep. That's always a topic. And we did have some incremental improvement or movement, I should say, on the jail issue. Quickly approaching November election, and the commissioners really decided this week that they're not going to make that happen. They're not going to get a bond on the November ballot for a new jail mm-hmm. in Canyon County. They're looking at anywhere from $170 million to $190 million new jail, and they're trying to figure out how much money they're going to ask voters for to build this new jail. And they just decided this week that they're going to shoot for May. So they've kind of put that off, and you know the prospect of putting a bond on the ballot and then and doing outreach and convincing people to vote for it in 2 months is just too daunting. And so they're going to start ramping up and shoot for mm-hmm. May.
That's going to be very interesting, especially with this ask from IDOC about this, what, $500,000 prison expansion.
Half a billion.
Half a billion. Sorry. I always get that word. You know, I can't wrap my head around the B. Like, that's the problem. So $500,000,000. And yet then you have a county jail that needs a new jail because one of the solutions right now is basically bringing in trailers into
right.
the parking lot
yep.
of the Canyon County Jail.
Yep. And we had movement on that as well this week. So the matter went before the Caldwell City Planning and Zoning Commission because it needs approval. The county jail is in Caldwell City limits.
Mm-hmm.
And the county has a proposal to put these trailers, steel cargo trailers, to house female inmates in the parking lot of the Canyon County Jail. And they had to go before Caldwell Planning and Zoning to get approval for it. Caldwell Planning and Zoning approved it on a narrow vote, 3-2. The two Planning and Zoning Commission members said that this is not a good look. This does not fit with what we want for the future, and they denied it, but they were overruled by the three other commissioners, yeah. and it got approved. Now, it could get appealed and go before city council, but as is, without an appeal, it stands and the county can go ahead. Now, the county still has to go ahead and approve funding to the tune of about $7 million over the next – or $11 million over the next 7 years, including $2.3 million this year to start the contract with the company, and they are hoping that they can get these trailers installed and in use by spring.
And you know what? Take a picture of that. It's going to go viral.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it's a hard concept to wrap your brain around that mm-hmm. this is where we're at.
Right.
You know, when it comes to housing inmates. Mike, I want to bring you into the conversation. KIVI covered the court hearing that happened earlier this week with the suspect in the mass stabbing in Boise that happened back in June. That was an emotional day.
Right. Well, and listening to the actual sound of the court hearing and listening to the details of what what Rhea's mother is going through, I think it almost makes me feel it's starting to feel almost voyeuristic. And it's kind of an uncomfortable feeling as a journalist because there's so much pain and she's going through so much and she's reaching out and doing things that we have to report on. But it's all in grief, right? And to see his reaction, to see him turn around and kind of acknowledge the mother of his alleged victim, it's one of the difficult things, I think, of being a journalist is anytime you're covering crimes that happened to a child, and then you start dealing with the details that came out in this court hearing, where the stab wounds were, the stab wounds to the face. It's and knowing that the mother's sitting there hearing it, I just it's a terrifying story to have to cover in our own Treasure Valley and see it happen here in Boise.
And you make a good point because that was the first time earlier this week that the judge actually gave details, because to this point, I mean, we knew that there had been a stabbing. We knew there were a number of victims. We did not know anything more really than that.
Right. Well, I mean, we knew the severity, right?
Exactly. Like,
we knew that she had died, but there's something about the face, right? Mm-hmm. As humans, I think we all look at each other's faces to recognize things. That the face is the window to the soul, right? And here we are learning these details about a 3-year-old girl at her birthday party. It's a hard thing to do.
Right.
And this whole story, I mean, from the first day of coverage has been a very difficult thing for our reporters to have to follow.
And I think any reporter in general, and sometimes I think as media, people forget that we're human beings at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm speaking with Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Mike Sharp with KIVI Television, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press. And wanted to talk a little bit more. Scott, the last time you were here, we talked about this vacant land. And it was supposed to be used for the Kenyon County Fair. That didn't happen. So then it was go up for auction.
Right. And I am eating my hat this week because a couple of weeks ago I was on this program talking about this, saying, you know, expressing deep skepticism that this land would sell for $1.6 million. That was about $80,000 an acre. And the county bought this land in 2009 for $1.54 million to put the new county fair grounds mm-hmm. on this spot on 80 acres. And it just never went anywhere. And they finally decided to get rid of the land, and they decided to put it up for auction for $1.6 million. I did not think they were going to get that. It's in the middle of farmland. It has no entitlements to it. It's still zoned agriculture. Well, they put up for auction. I actually told the reporter, I said, well, expect it to be really quick because I don't think anybody's going to show up. But two people showed up, including Mark Bottles of Idaho Holdings LLC. And Mark Bottles is a well-known commercial real estate broker in the area. And he bid on it and won the auction at $1.635 million. So it actually went over the asking price. And so the county commissioners are very happy. They accepted the bid, and they say they're going to put the money toward the current county fairgrounds, improving the current county fairgrounds in Caldwell. So a good news story.
But no word from Bottles at this point what he'll do. I mean, he's a commercial developer.
He's representing an undisclosed buyer. So we don't know who the buyer is or what the purpose
would be. So we don't know if it's local.
Don't know anything about who the buyer is.
And then, Betsy, Governor Otter, he has pardoned a fourth person during his tenure. Now, once again, though, for a drug conviction, because I believe all of his pardons have been drug-related,
so
correct?
So far, they've all been drug offenses. And this one, I thought it was interesting that it was someone, basically the governor described it as a rehabilitated criminal. This is someone who was convicted of selling marijuana more than 30 years ago, who went on after serving his time to have a successful career, a religious awakening, become active in his community. He's now retired. And lo, this many decades after the fact, he's now been pardoned.
That's a fascinating story.
It is an interesting story, and it's a role of the governor that doesn't get a lot of attention. Right. The governor does have the ability to pardon people, and there are a heck of a lot of people out there in the prison who wish he would.
Well, right, I bet, especially when we're talking justice reinvestment, right? So Marv Hagedor, he stepped down out of his seat. He was a state senator, District 14, out of Meridian. Has gone to the state Veterans Affairs Department, head of that department. So they had to fill the position. They filled it with C. Scott Grow. And Mike, you guys have reported on this at KIVI because it's very interesting because from a political science standpoint, you were saying, because he is a former LDS general authority in the Quorum of 70.
Right, right. So the way the church is structured, you have the first presidency, which is the president of the church, then the 12 apostles, the Quorum of the 12, and then the Quorum of the 70.
So that's a powerful group. Then,
right,
when you look
right.
at,
it's
okay.
a really big deal. And I was shocked when the announcement came because it's not mentioned anywhere, right? It wasn't mentioned in the release that came from the governor's office. It's not mentioned because he was running. He's currently the Republican nominee for that seat already. It's not mentioned on his site, which I understand totally. But his name is still listed on all official church documents on the church website. So I reached out to him and he and I had a conversation and he kind of laughed about it because it seems like what actually happened was he was released in September. That's the term they used for when they're no longer in that position. So he was released from that calling in September of last year, but they forgot or didn't announce it in October because there's a general conference where the church leaders speak directly to the mm-hmm. Parishioners of the church. And he spoke in April of 2017 to the 15 million people in the church. I mean, it's a really big deal. So he was not announced as having been released in October or April. It sounds like it's going to happen in October. But up until that moment when I'm having that conversation with him, we're talking about somebody who's incredibly powerful in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, surrounded by other senators who are also members of that faith, maybe not members of that faith, will be perceived as possibly speaking on behalf of the church if certain issues come up. I imagine that's still possibly true. Let's say cannabinoid comes up on the House floor or the Senate floor. There are tons of issues that could come up that there was even a concern. I received a phone call from another senator who happens to be LDS, and he said to me that his first instinct when he saw me reacting was that he thought the concern was going to be that there would be some sort of LDS posse that would grow around whatever C. Scott Grow wanted, that they would vote because they would need
to
impress
him. They would just vote in that.
Which isn't where I was going with it at all. So it was funny, having a conversation with him because he agreed. It's happened, I think we found twice. There was Senator Smoot from Utah that served as a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles as well as a U.S. senator.
At the same time.
Yes. And then in a less political position and more government position, Ezra Taft Benson was a member of the 12 Apostles while also sitting as the Secretary of Agriculture for Eisenhower. So it's happened before. They had a member of the 12 Apostles get sanctioned for donating to a candidate for the school board. So, they're not a political office, right? So if you're a general authority, it's a big deal if you're involved politically. I imagine it would be a big deal if you're speaking on the Senate floor. So I was just intrigued by it. I thought it would have been a fascinating thing.
Well, and then what about – it's interesting that you say they are not a political group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So – but you can see how maybe the general public, and especially if you're not LDS,
right?
To see that, like, oh, my gosh – you have someone this powerful sitting in a political seat. How does that play out?
Right. And I was trying to think of an example. I came up with, let's say, the person who ran the state's archdiocese became a senator, imagine what Planned Parenthood would do, right? Like there would – advocacy groups for issues that are difficult for religions and for people in those faiths to deal
– yeah. Right.
It's those issues, they're going to be immediately concerned about what does this mean? Are you going to be speaking on behalf of the church, or are you going to be speaking on behalf of yourself?
Or your constituents, right?
Right. And that's – it's – and so obviously that hurdle is not an issue because he is no longer in that position. He's, I assume, you know, going to represent his district just as Senator Hagedorn did. But I can see that with his former position in the church that that is going to be an issue at some point. I imagine somebody's going to raise concerns. He seems – he kind of laughed about it with me. He's excited to take this opportunity and be outside this. I imagine there's a ton of stress being in leadership of that church. So
he's probably like, this is nothing.
Exactly. Right? He's excited to talk about less controversial issues.
Right, exactly. Good perspective, Mike. Really interesting. We're continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My panel of journalists include Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, Mike Sharp with KIVI Television, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. You're listening to Idaho Matters, and I'm Gemma Gaudette. Scott, let's dive right into this controversial issue. So Boise State University, they are planning to build a new baseball stadium. They're bringing baseball back. They ran into some stumbling blocks when it came to getting the land they needed. So
Boise State University went to the State Board of Education this week, and we thought this was going to be a bigger deal. We saw it on the agenda, and we thought, oh, boy, we better cover that. But they asked the State Board of Education to give them approval to use eminent domain to take a couple of properties so that they could use it for the stadium. So the Boise State University has identified this block near campus, near the stadium off of Broadway, where they want to build the new baseball stadium. And apparently they've been in negotiations with three landowners in that area. In that block, and one of the landowners has agreed to sell their property for the stadium, but two others have not agreed. They've not been able to come to terms of agreement. Mm-hmm. And so the next step now is to essentially force a sale of the land. Now, they would still be compensated for that property. They would bring in an appraiser, and they would appraise the property, and the Boise State University would pay them that fair market value for that land. But anytime you're talking about eminent domain, it's going to be controversial.
There are just so many things surrounding this that, I mean, you think as a landowner, though, I mean, yes, okay, fair market value. But in this day and age and how property prices are just skyrocketing, you know, is it really going to be at fair market value, or is it, we know we're going to build this, so we're going to take this anyway?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think these appraisers in Idaho, you know, are to be trusted. You know, they're like referees or umpires. They don't have an agenda against somebody. They really are coming in and looking at what is the fair market value right now. And of course, somebody who owns the land and doesn't want to sell it, they're going to think that it's worth a lot more right. than it really is. You know, the buyer wants to get the best deal possible. But I think, you know, appraisers definitely know that going into it. And I think it's a process that can be trusted.
So did the State Board of Ed approve that then?
They approved okay. Boise State University going ahead with eminent domain.
So does the landowner, do they get an opportunity to come back and say, oh, never mind, we'll sell before you?
Yeah, well, I don't know the exact process of it, but I think they start the proceedings of eminent domain, and then they get the appraisal, and then I think they can start fighting over it.
It's going to be an interesting one on that one. Okay, so Betsy, update us on the sewer fee lawsuit at the Idaho Supreme Court. Where are we at with that issue?
So that's a lawsuit that's been going on since 2012, and it involves the city of Hayden and their sewer connection fee. But it has implications pretty much for every city in Idaho, because the state laws that govern what kind of fees can be charged for a hookup to a city sewer system are very strictly limiting, as far as that it has to just be a user fee. It can't be a general tax. And we've seen other cities in Idaho get into trouble with this. City of Pocatello in particular had a case where they were charging a fee that was determined to be an illegal tax. And that is the allegation that the building contractors in North Idaho made against the city of Hayden. And initially, they failed. The lawsuit was thrown out. The judge said, nope, this is a reasonable user fee. And then it went up to the Supreme Court, and it went back down to the court, and the builders prevailed. And now they want refunds of not only the additional fees that they had objected to, but of all sewer connection fees that anybody who built a new home in the city of Hayden paid during the years in question. Because of a statute of limitations, that's only a two-year period, but it's $2 million
that
the city would have to pay back. And
does that city even have that kind of money?
Well, they'd been collecting these fees and putting them in an account to maintain and expand their sewer system. And the question is, what the city apparently did wrong legally was initially they based the increase in fees on what it would cost to serve three times as many homes as they had at the time, because they were anticipating that many new homes and they had to figure out how to serve the new growth. But that makes it not really a user fee. It makes these users subsidizing future users who would come in later. And so then they had to do a different type of study. They said, well, if we just calculated the actual cost of the benefit to this new home that's hooking up, it actually came to more than we charged them, so we're okay. That kind of calculation is allowed. So then that goes to the question of how does a city plan for growth? If you can't ever consider
that you might
how
get
you'll
bigger.
Fund future growth,
right.
And the Association of Idaho Cities has weighed in on this and asked the court to provide guidance to cities saying there's got to be a way to comply with our current user fee law and recognize the incremental costs when a community is growing. And boy, are communities growing in Idaho right now.
Because you can't build a wastewater treatment plant for one house and then assess that, you know, that house for that. You know, you've got
just their little chunk of it.
If you build a $10 million wastewater treatment plant, you've got to figure out how much it's going to cost each house to fund that $10 million.
But this is a fascinating conversation, though, when it comes to growth, because I mean, we continue to grow. Idaho continues to grow. The Treasure Valley is booming. So it brings up all kinds of questions, because if you want to grow smart, then wouldn't this be part of how you do that potentially?
Right. And under current law, there are two other ways that a city could fund a sewer system expansion. They could pass a bond, ask their voters to approve a bond and pay it off over a number of years, or they could raise property taxes. But nobody uses property taxes to do this, and bonds are controversial. And the reason is because under both of those methods, all the current users pay more than the new people who are causing the need for the expansion in the first place.
And, Mike, I want to talk about when we talk about growth, KIVI did a really interesting story on the fact that how nonprofits are actually being affected by all the growth that we're seeing.
Right. We have a franchise. Don Nelson, one of our anchors, has been doing stories called State of 208, just about kind of the growing pains that come with this massive growth. And his story that aired on Sunday was about Meals on Wheels. And as growth has continued to cause problems in all these other facets of life, the need for Meals on Wheels has expanded and pretty dramatically. And just at the same time that a lot of donors are maybe turning to less social services and social things, they're turning to arts and things like that because the economy is getting better. That's kind of a natural swing of things. At that exact time, our expansion of population continues to grow, and they're feeling that weight. It's difficult.
So what can they do about this, though? I mean, do they have to just try to solicit more donations?
Right. I mean, that's that they're making an effort to raise funds and continue to find new pockets of donors and people who are going to help support those programs. But also, I mean, raising this alarm, you know, hoping that by telling people that this is a concern, that more people will step forward to help.
Because frankly, when I saw the headline, I thought, oh, well, of course, I bet nonprofits are all doing better. There's more people coming in. They're donating more money. And they are.
Right.
Things like the arts.
Right. Right. Well, and it's a traditional trend of donations for nonprofits. But people forget, everybody gets caught up on rates, right? What's the rate of hunger? What's the rate? What's the percentage of people who are food insecure? That percentage is less important if the overall population continues to grow because those numbers start to kind of stagnate and level off, right?
Oh, interesting.
So even with a decrease in rates, the number's still going to be pretty high. So while donors are maybe sitting at home seeing a decrease in rates of need, they may be less likely to make that donation, but those nonprofits are still serving maybe even more people than they were serving last month or last year at this time.
And either with the same amount of money coming in or less.
Exactly.
Right. Well, we are running out of time. Always a pleasure to have you guys in. I appreciate you getting updated on all of these issues. My guest today, Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Mike Sharp with KIVI Television, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.